This is the Navigating Adult ADHD podcast, here to help you navigate and thrive with ADHD in adulthood. I'm your host, Zena, and I was diagnosed at age 36. As with many ADHDers, I have a rebellious and nonconformist style. And that means that there will likely be swearing in the coming episode. Please be mindful of any little people. Hello, my friends. Welcome back to the Navigating Adult ADHD podcast, where we are up to episode number 20. Today, we're going to be talking about ADHD medication, why it is not enough, but rather it's one of the many tools that we have available. And I'm also going to share with you 13 other tools that you can use, which is by no means a complete list of what is available to us. Now, before we dive into that, I just want to quickly remind you that this is really your last chance to register for the free ADHD masterclass I am running on Friday, the 4th of August. If you want more information on that, and if you want to register, visit zenajones.com/masterclass. Okay, so let's talk about it. Medication. It is, as I said, one of the tools that we have available to us when we have ADHD. However, it is not available to everyone. Some of you may have medical reasons that you can't take it, or you may have chosen not to get diagnosed and you are self-diagnosed, or perhaps, you know, you just prefer not to take medication, and that's totally okay too. I have zero judgment on whether you choose to use medication or not. Okay. Now, I want to do a quick recap. So for those of us with ADHD, we have lower levels of dopamine, which is responsible for motivation, focus, mood, or part of the mood equation, feelings of satisfaction, pleasure. We are also have lower levels of norepinephrine. Now, that's just a fancy way of saying adrenaline, because in the brain it's called norepinephrine, in the body, when it's, you know, released for use, it is called adrenaline, okay? That is responsible for alertness, and it also contributes to our attention. We also have lower levels of serotonin, which explains some of the sleep issues that some of us, me included, do experience. It also plays into the mood and emotional regulation for us as well. So, medication can help to artificially increase those levels. However, as I just want to be super clear in saying that medication is one of many tools we have available, and medication alone is not enough if you want to thrive with ADHD, especially for women, because we have that added element of hormones to navigate. And when our estrogen levels drop, our medication typically becomes less effective, which is just another reason why having more tools available to us is so important. Now, I thought of this example for you guys. Treating ADHD with just medication is like trying to fix a leaky roof by just mopping up all of the water that's on the floor. So while the mop may temporarily soak up the water, it won't actually address the root cause of the leak. Similarly, medication can help us to manage symptoms and provide some relief, but it doesn't address many of the underlying factors. So I was interviewed today for an article that's going to come out over the next couple of weeks, and I was asked about what it's like in my head. I thought that was a hilarious question because this person is neurotypical and she doesn't understand what it's like to have a really busy mind. And I felt like asking, what's it like in your head? So I described to her, you know, inside my brain, it's kind of like there's a squirrel and I'm going from here to there to there to there. And it's just constant stream of thoughts and noise and just so much going on. And I tried, you know, I kind of like did my best to describe it to her. And then she went on to ask me if medication helped with that, if it helped to quiet my mind. And I thought about it for a second and I said, you know what? I can only speak for myself, but for me, no, it doesn't. It doesn't help to quiet my mind. All the noise and the chatter and all the things that's still going on, it's very busy. It just sometimes helps me, and I say sometimes because not all the time, helps me to, you know, listen to it less and be more focused or direct it in a certain attention. Now, how medication impacts each of us will be unique based on our own biology, our own, you know, makeup, our human bodies. So again, medication is not a one-stop shop. It's one of the tools that we have available. So today I really want to focus on the other tools that we have available. I want to help you to create your own custom toolkit. Okay, now again, this is a big part of the reason I'm running that ADHD masterclass, so I can like go into specifics and give you guys, you know, more tools and more examples, etc. But we're going to start diving into a lot of that today. So when it comes to having ADHD, we already know it is complex. It is, you know, there are a lot of varying ways that it affects each of us, and also to varying degrees. So the way in which it might impact you might impact me less, and vice versa. So of course, there's not like a one size fits all toolkit. You know, the best way to find the tools that work for each of us is to play with lots of different things and customize our very own toolkit. Now, I use the word play very intentionally. It's one of my favorite words at the moment. But I think it's so important because we ADHDers, we have an interest-based nervous system, which we talked about, I think, in the last episode, episode 19. And that means we're drawn to and driven by things that are fun and interesting and novel and new. Hence, let's just play with these tools. Okay, you with me? So using a range of these things is how I function. It's how I not only function, but also how I thrive with ADHD. And it's also what I go to when I'm faced with challenges. And I'm going to share a recent challenge that I had where my ADHD symptoms were like exasperated and I had less energy and less focus and all of these things. And I'll share some of the tools as we go through. I lean on these tools and I use them all the time. So let's run through some of the many tools that we have available. I'm going to start with books. So I highly recommend the books ADHD 2.0 by Ned Halliwell, Taking Charge of Adult ADHD by Russell Barkley, and A Radical Guide for Women with ADHD by Sari Sodden. I think I'm saying that right. Sodden. So those are three of the books that have really had a positive impact on me. They have helped me and many of my clients to better understand ourselves, our brains, how they work, but also for, you know, validation and for hearing other people's stories and how other people work with certain things. So that last one specifically by Sari Sodden, which is called A Radical Guide for Women with ADHD, it is also a workbook style throughout. So she takes you through lots of questions to help you better understand yourself and then foster self-acceptance and self-compassion. It is a very, very powerful book. But I think that books in general are a great way to normalize our experience from hearing, you know, other people's stories, whilst also learning from experts in the field of ADHD, as well as just other ADHDers who have found varying ways to overcome some of their ADHD-related challenges. Like, these books are just packed full of tips and tools for us, basically. They're tailored just to us. And they're cheap, especially if you have access to a library. It will be incredibly cheap. But not only that, you can get them in various formats, meaning whether that's audio or paperback or, you know, an online digital copy. And that really helps with each of our individual learning styles and learning needs that we have. I am a huge fan of going for a walk and listening to an audio book, or driving the car and listening to one. That helps me to kind of process and retain some of the information. Of course, my brain wanders. Of course. And I just know that I'm just taking in what I need as we go. Or if something like piques my interest, I'll go back and listen to it again, sometimes multiple times. Now, if shame and stigma, the ADHD stigma is something that you struggle with, then I highly, highly, highly recommend the book, You Can Heal Your Life, from Louise Hay. And she also has, you know, many exercises throughout that book, which I have been through and done. This was the very first self-help book that I was ever introduced to, and it quite literally changed my life. I cried at the end when it was over because it had been so profound to me, and it helped me to release so much of the shame and the self-loathing and the judgment I had for myself and where I was currently at that stage of life. So again, that is Louise Hay, You Can Heal Your Life. It was profound for me. Now, another of our tools available is exercise. Now, if you have a love-hate relationship with exercise, I just want to say, pick something that you do like or you want to play with or try. Exercise can tick a lot of different boxes for us. If we are doing particularly high intensity exercise, that will produce quite a lot of dopamine, which can be incredibly useful if you have something you have been avoiding that you need to focus on. I had this recently. I went for a run and then I sat down to do something that I'd been avoiding for most of the day that I really needed to work on. But having that extra dopamine in my system really helped me to focus. Also, for emotional processing, it can be really good for us just to move our bodies to A, connect with our own body and, you know, drop out of our head and into our body, but also to process the emotions that we're having, whether that's frustration or anger or even joy, or it might be overwhelm. Movement is proven to help us to get out of our heads into our bodies, which in turn helps us to regain control of our prefrontal cortex, our more kind of logical reasoning part of our brain, which is really important if, you know, we have decisions to make or things that we need to respond to. The key with exercise, as I said though, is doing something you enjoy. The more you enjoy it, the more you will benefit from it, especially in terms of the amount of dopamine it releases in your brain. It is scientifically proven that exercise improves mood, it improves focus, and it improves attention. So it is a very powerful tool that we have available and generally for free as well. Another one here is sun exposure, particularly if possible. And I know that doesn't work for everyone, but if possible, before 10 a.m. The reason I say before 10 a.m. is there are studies that show that it has a positive impact on our sleep cycles and helping us to create more alertness if it's before 10 a.m., but also the impact on our, there's a hormone I'm forgetting. Bugger, it'll come to me. But the way basically it impacts our sleep cycles. As well as it also, sun exposure also increases serotonin levels, which supports our mood, our overall mood and feelings of well-being. So a couple of studies have actually said 20 minutes of sunlight before 10 a.m. is highly recommended if possible. And of course, like, you know, take protection, wear sunscreen, etc. if needed. But then 30 minutes if it is a cloudy, overcast, more crappy kind of a day. I say crappy, but some people love it that way. My partner is one of those people. He loves the overcast weather. I love the sunshine. So I appreciate that that is up for debate. All right, so that's sun exposure. The next one on my list is sleep. Now, studies show that a lack of sleep actually exacerbates our ADHD symptoms. And I can for sure attest to that. Just last week, I went away for the weekend and I had some time with my family. And on the very last night, I had a very sugary dessert, not something I typically have. I drank 3 alcoholic drinks, which is one more than I would typically normally have. And then I was quite alert and awake and I couldn't go to sleep and I was wide awake at midnight. I typically go to sleep around 10-ish, 10 p.m.-ish. So I had set my alarm as well for 6 a.m. because I had an early morning flight, and I got all sleep. And the next day was so hard. It was such a struggle to, function in general. My mood was really low. I was so frustrated. I was easily frustrated. I got home to see my partner, who I had missed and I love and couldn't wait to hang out with. But all I could see was the mess that he hadn't tidied up. And he's like, oh, the house isn't too bad, is it? And I was like, all I could see was like what he hadn't done and how annoyed I was. I was just frustrated. I was low mood. I was focusing on lots of negative things. I was tired. I struggled to function at work. I had a couple of clients, which I was able to get through. And then after that, I had a list of things I needed to do for work. And it was a challenge. I ended up saying, you know what? I'm better just to put these down for tomorrow and not do them now, because I'm pretty much gone for the day. I had checked out. I was just unable to focus, to concentrate, to really function. So that is a combination of things. It was the sleep. It was also the sugar for me, which we'll touch on in a minute. And probably also the additional alcoholic beverage would have played into that as well. So when it comes to sleep, 7 or more hours of good quality sleep really help our dopamine levels, you know, serotonin as well. But like when it comes to dopamine, if you have perhaps been in a place of, and I don't think we've talked about this on the podcast yet. No, I don't think we have, but dopamine debt, where I don't want to go into this too much, but if you have perhaps experienced a little bit of burnout or you're experiencing a lot of apathy, you may be in a place of dopamine debt where your dopamine levels have basically gone into overdraft. They've plunged below baseline and you're really, really struggling. One of the key factors in, you know, coming out of that place is good quality sleep. So again, 7+ hours where possible really helps us with our dopamine levels and replenishing any dopamine back up to our baseline. Now, I know this one isn't simple, and I do want to reiterate that. Like, there are people who work night shift. Everyone has different sleep schedules. But also for those of us with ADHD, often sleep is something that we can have many challenges with for varying reasons, whether it's, you know, you lie down and all of a sudden, like, your mind can't switch off and you just feel alert. There's lots of different things at play there, okay? Another thing that is recommended when it comes to sleep is not having any artificial lights between 10 p.m. and 4 a.m. Okay, so not, you know, if you wake up during the night, try to avoid turning the light on if you can, and try to, you know, minimize or avoid wherever possible artificial lighting between those hours. Okay, that will really help to improve sleep. Melatonin, damn it, that was the thing I wanted before, and melatonin levels as well, which is a sleep hormone. I love how it came to me like right in the middle. Fantastic. So ADHD of me. All right, next one on my list is nervous system. Oh gosh, I could talk about this one all day. In fact, I did last week, a whole episode, but still there's so much more to cover. But when it comes to nervous system, like there are such a wide range of tools that we can use to really work with our nervous system, particularly if we are in a state of fight or flight or freeze. There's actually a fourth one called fawn, where we kind of people please and appease everyone. So if, you know, the nervous system is something that you want to particularly work with, last week, and I think also in the procrastination episode, I talked about NICU, novelty, interest, competition, and urgency, right? Like adding an element of those things to a task that you want to get done really speaks to our interest-based nervous system, and it's a great way to help us to get ourselves motivated. However, when we're talking nervous system and, you know, whether that be overwhelm or you're in a state of fight or flight, etc., things like mindfulness, grounding, breath work, and meditation are all great tools. And even having, you know, some of those built into your routine or just using them as and when needed, which is really what I do. If I'm experiencing any emotional dysregulation, that's when I really kind of lean on those things heavily. When my, you know, my nervous system's out of whack, my body's out of whack, I will lean on, you know, the breath work. For me, meditation is generally like going for a walk. And perhaps listening to, you know, a specific playlist or some, you know, white noise or something like that, or even a meditation playlist. But varying things like that are really, really helpful when we're in you know, emotional dysregulation. Okay, I think that's what I was saying. Kind of lost track of my train of thought there, but we were talking about nervous system tools. So the next one on my list is diet. And I'm not telling you to go on a diet. I'm talking about what we eat specifically. So eating lots of protein, for example, starting the day with a high protein breakfast. I have made that something I do basically every day now, and I definitely notice the difference that it sets me up for the first half of the day. It does make a huge difference to me personally, for sure. So proteins contain amino acids which help with the production of dopamine. Okay, so therefore, if we can produce more dopamine or make it easier for our brain to produce it, that is a win-win, my friends. Also, eating foods that are high in L-tyrosine and omega-3 fatty acids. Those have been shown through the data and the research to help improve our ADHD symptoms as well as supporting brain function. So you can like literally Google a list of what those foods are, but there are also supplements available. I recently brought the L-tyrosine supplement and I've only been taking it now for, I want to say about 10 days. Some, like, I've heard other people talk about getting a kind of a bit of a hit or a high from it when you take it, like noticing an alertness or a focus or something. I don't notice any of that. This is just me and my biology, right? I don't notice any of that, but I wanted to increase those levels as a means to trying to increase my baseline level of dopamine, which I believe had kind of decreased over time, and it's something I'm starting to build back up. That, my friends, is a whole conversation for a different episode around the dopamine debt. But again, you know, using the L-tyrosine, the omega-3, etc., whether it's, you know, increasing those foods in your diet or through the supplements, again, is proven to help with brain function and ADHD symptoms. Another thing I want to mention when it comes to diet is just being mindful of processed foods, sugary foods, and alcohol. Now, especially if you are like me and you are highly sensitive to some of these things, but also if you have that all or nothing personality that many of us ADHDers do have, it is something to be mindful of. So when we have the, you know, the highly processed, the sugary, the alcohol, all of that, right, it will cause a spike in dopamine generally, but it will also come with a crash. And remember from that, the two dopamine episodes we did, like what goes up does come down, but when our dopamine comes down, it plunges below baseline. And the more we do it, you know, using these sorts of things through food and alcohol, etc., the longer we stay down below baseline, meaning the less dopamine we have, the less motivation, the less focus, the less of a you know, the worse our mood, let me say it that way. So just being mindful of that, it kind of might be something that you want to therefore play with, which I definitely do. So not only does it, you know, lead to that crash in dopamine levels, but it can also lead to fatigue. Again, we're talking about like processed sugary foods and alcohol consumption. It can lead to fatigue. It can lead to impulsivity and less focus. Now, I'm not saying go out and eliminate all of these things from your diet. I'm just saying play with it and maybe pay attention to it and like learn from yourself. So for me, I play with this a lot, actually. So I recently took a few weeks of no alcohol. I actually took a whole year off alcohol to really learn from it. But I recently took a few weeks off alcohol and really observed my body and my brain and my attention and my focus, my mood and all these things. And then I introduced it back in and kind of watched that. And then two drinks was fine. But as soon as I went up to that three, that was when the next day was negatively impacted. Again, sugar is something I'm highly sensitive to. So I know the more I have it, the more like I'm really addictive, right? Many ADHDers have that kind of addictive personality, but the more I have sugar, the more I want it, and the more it like messes with me mentally. It does lead to the fatigue. I am less focused. Sometimes it's all I can think about is getting my next sugar fix. So I know for me that it definitely has a negative impact on my ADHD symptoms. So therefore, it's something that I minimize as much as possible. And I just use natural sugar alternatives, which I must say, like, there's some pretty good stuff out there if that's something you want to play with and explore. Okay. Next up is body doubling. Now, this is when, whether, you know, people sometimes do this in person, like in co-working spaces and stuff, but quite often it's done virtually online and you just join each other on like a platform like Zoom, etc. And you will be there for a set period of time and some people will drop in and out. But the idea is that you have other people who are also working and achieving certain things during that time and you've got that accountability to the people that you're amongst. And there's also an element of energy being contagious when you're all there for that common goal of achieving certain things and working. And depending on the platform and where and how you do this, you generally, like, you will tell the other person or people that you're with what it is that you want to accomplish, and they may follow up with you, or there may be somebody kind of monitoring it saying, okay, everybody give me a progress update. So as I said, that will vary depending on the place and the platform. But the whole idea is that you're amongst other people who also have that goal of getting specific tasks done. One of the ways I love to do this is I go to a cafe. Now, I appreciate that for some people, that type of stimulation doesn't work well for you and will be very distracting. But for me, it works particularly well because I'm in an environment where I feel like everyone's watching me and what I'm doing. And it just, for some reason, I'm just so productive. I am incredibly productive when I go to a cafe knowing what it is that I want to get done, just being in that environment with that buzz and that noise and it's a lot of stimulation and distraction, but it keeps me focused, keeps me on task. So that's one I use. Speaking of stimulation, that is another tool in our toolkit here that we can play with. So when we're talking about stimulation, it's often music or sound of some sort. But again, I talked about the stimulation of being in the cafe environment. So when it comes to music or sound, it can be a great way that we increase focus and help to drive our attention to our tasks. It can also be something very useful, particularly the sounds element, whether it's white noise or brown noise. It can be very helpful when it comes to sleeping or switching off, maybe meditating even. If you are to look up, I just do this on Spotify, I look up white noise and brown noise playlists and they come up. But right now, my go-to hyperfixation, shall we say, is a Spotify playlist called Neurodivergent Eargasms. That's right, Neurodivergent Eargasms. And it's more so sounds, but it's just like a massage for my brain that really helps me to focus. You can also search on Spotify for various, you know, ADHD playlists, or 8D music is really, really good as well. If you look up 8D music, that is another great one that I will sometimes go to. I've got a few of those playlists saved. But just having that available and, again, playing with it, particularly when you have something you need to focus on or get done, can really help. All right, next up on the list is cold water therapy. Now, my friends, if your initial thought is fuck that, I'm with you. I love hot showers. I don't like the cold. So I get it. However, stay with me for a minute because, and I did talk about this in the dopamine part one and two of the dopamine, I think it was in part two of the dopamine series that we did. How powerful cold water therapy is for increasing dopamine levels, but not only like increasing them a significant amount, but having a sustained release that will last you for hours, meaning that you can feel literally amazing for hours. And when I say amazing, more motivated, more focused, more driven, better mood, all the things. Like, it really ticks so many boxes. And also, it doesn't like plunge below baseline in a negative way. It just gradually comes back down. So it increases both our dopamine and our norepinephrine levels by staggering amounts, basically. So my most recent experience with this was last week when I decided to go for a swim in the ocean. By swim, I mean very fast dip in and out. No swimming. So it was a beautiful sunny day, but it is winter here at the time of recording this here in New Zealand. It is winter, so still cold and the water's bloody freezing. But somebody had offered to go with me and I said, you know what, let's just do it. And so I went in. There was a lot of screaming on my part. I went in, I dunked myself under twice, and I got out. That was long enough. I was lucky to probably be in there like a minute, maybe two, I don't know. But it was incredible. It really was. So I had improved focus. I was motivated. And I actually had a few tasks that I'd kept kind of wanting to do over the weeks that was never like had to get done, but I did really want to get them done. And so I sat down after this. I was still like wet and wrapped in a towel and warm because my office gets a lot of sun, but I just sat down and did it. Like I wanted to do it. I had these tasks that I'd been avoiding that I was happy to sit down and do. And my mood was incredible and that lasted for days. I had more motivation and increased mood for days. That kind of blew my mind because I thought, you know, I'll probably get a few hours. And, you know, this may not be the experience every time, but it did last for a long time, which was awesome. Of course, I want to, you know, add a word of caution, like do be careful, be mindful of any heart conditions or medical conditions and even start gradually. Like I've heard some people say, you know, in the shower after you've had your hot shower is just turn it down to kind of, you know, the cool temperature and, you know, do that for a couple of minutes and then just slightly increase that every now and again to till you're able to tolerate it being colder. Now, that's a great way to do it, but me personally just can't do it that way. I don't want to take the joy out of my showers, first of all, but also just getting in and out, like the whole cold plunge, just getting it over with, that works well for my brain. All right, next up is positive self-talk. This is a biggie, my friends. So there are studies out there, and I may have mentioned this before, studies that show that by the age of 10, a child with ADHD has heard 20,000 more criticisms than their peers. By the age of 10, 20,000 more criticisms than their peers. Isn't that wild and wrong? I have thoughts. But it's no wonder that we can be so quick to beat ourselves up and to be hard on ourselves. So when it comes to positive self-talk, practicing self-compassion is so important. And I say practice because it does require practice. It generally is not our go-to thing, right? Our neural pathways in our brain are generally wired to go down the route of beating ourselves up, being hard on ourselves. And we have to actively pave a new route that is the choice of going self-compassion, being kind to ourselves. I talk a lot about having your own back. That is something I practice, preach, and teach, having your own back. And I often ask myself, or I'll ask my clients, the question of, what does it look like to have your own back right now? Or another way I love to ask this is, what is the most loving thing I can do for me right now? Okay, so those are two questions that you can use to play with the positive self-talk and the self-compassion tool here, okay? And if you struggle with self-worth and self-confidence, then these are going to be incredibly useful, you know, kind of places to start. And on the back of that, I've definitely got to mention like therapy and coaching. Those are a couple of tools that are available. And for the most part, I appreciate that like they do require an investment. There may be some funding that you're able to get, or you may have insurance that covers that, which is fantastic. But working with an expert to help you untangle some of the messy parts and also help you to form your own toolkit unique to you is so incredible. Like coaching was foundational in helping me to end my own self-loathing, to stop trying to seek, you know, approval and external validation, and to finally just accept myself. And it changed my life so dramatically. It's why I became a coach 8 years ago now. And again, if you have trauma, and maybe that's the reason why you have ADHD. So CPTSD, complex post-traumatic stress disorder, often brings about ADHD or ADHD-like symptoms. So it's very common for, you know, people who have experienced trauma to experience ADHD or have ADHD or have symptoms. So if you have, you know, had trauma, then working with a trauma coach or a trauma therapist will be hugely beneficial. So for the women that I work with, particularly, I work with a lot of women around self-worth, self-confidence, as well as overcoming, you know, a lot of the kind of day-to-day obstacles in achieving our personal and professional goals. You know, it can often be relationships. It can be, you know, just emotional management is a biggie, dealing with overwhelm and overthinking. Now, those are all great areas to get coaching or therapy around and help to, you know, formulate your own toolkits. And there, this is also where things like ACT and CBT come in. So acceptance commitment therapy, and CBT is cognitive behavioral therapy. Also, thought work is another one. Okay, so they fall into those categories of coaching and therapy. If coaching is something that you would like to explore, then I definitely want to invite you to book in for a free consultation with me. You can do that over at zenajones.com. And the next one on the list here is community. Now, I thought about, like, do I add this as a tool or not? And then I thought, you know what? I think community can create such a sense of belonging, as well as like normalizing our experience, which I think really is a tool. Like, that is a support system, therefore it is a tool. So just being amongst people who get it, whether that's, you know, online through Facebook groups or meetup groups, you know, meetup.com, the website, or creating your own, whether that be, you know, in person or online, you can create your own social media accounts, even following people on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, wherever you are, you know, those kind of online platforms, following people who have ADHD, who you can really relate to. It all helps us to normalize our experiences, to feel less alone, which I think is huge, especially if you're surrounded by so many neurotypical people. You know, having that community element, normalizing your experience, creating a sense of belonging is huge. All right, we're almost there, my friends. Next one is being out in nature. So studies show that regular time spent in nature can help with focus as well as with mood. So I definitely recommend, wherever possible, get out in nature. Even get your feet in the sand or on the grass. That is grounding, and that is really, really good. All right, I'm going to have to wrap it up because it is by no means a complete list of the tools available, but at the same time, it's a great place for us all to start. And I would love to hear what tools you use. And, you know, I encourage you to reach out to me on social media. If you're on Instagram, come and find me, navigating.adult.adhd, the same name as this podcast, but you put some dots in it. And let me know, come and tag me and tell me, you know, what works for you in terms of tools with your ADHD, or send me a private message. If you do tag me on Instagram, I'll happily share it too. I do want to say, friends, like, play with this, play with these tools and learn from yourself. Treat it as one big experiment. Make it fun. And that's so much of what having ADHD is experimenting with what works for us and what doesn't. And sometimes that changes as well, because, as you know, we know with many of our hobbies, we love something for a couple of weeks and then we're like, nah. And it can sometimes be the same with the tools, right? We use a tool for a while and we're like, nah, we need to go and find something else. Okay, so again, play, learn, experiment, and have fun with it. Last couple of things I do want to say on this is, please do not use the tools against yourself. A hammer is great for building a house, but it can easily become a weapon when you turn it the wrong way. So if, for example, you eat lots of sugar and you think that you should quit just because I've mentioned it here, no, be kind to yourself. You don't have to quit sugar. It might be something that you have less of, or you play with, or you consume it in a different way, or you just pay a lot of attention to how you feel after you've had it or the days following. Okay, again, the key here, my friends, is play. And also, don't do it all at once. Pick a few things at a time, just a few, and play with them. Okay, we ADHDers, we've got that all or nothing mindset sometimes. But let's not go for that. Let's just play with little bits every now and again. Now, the last thing I'm going to say is the goal here is not consistency. I have some very strong opinions on the idea of consistency. But rather, the goal here is just to create a toolkit that works for you and to use it as and when needed. Okay? We really want to work with our brains, not against them. All right? That's a wrap. Huge love, my friends. Take care. I'll talk to you next week. Hey, friend. I know exactly what it's like to feel frustrated and confused with your ADHD and to wish that you could better understand what the hell is going on in your brain. And that's exactly why I created my coaching program, Thriving with ADHD. Inside Thriving with ADHD, you learn a step-by-step process to set and finally achieve your goals, to understand yourself and your ADHD. It's where you learn to feel better and manage your emotions and create systems and processes that work for you with your ADHD brain. This is designed for you to learn how to thrive with ADHD so you can create the life that you were meant to live. Visit zenajones.com/ADHD to learn more and book a consultation.